I would now like to introduce our speaker, Barbara.
Thank you. And I'm really happy to be here. It is such a thrill to be amongst compulsive overeaters and also to witness someone get a one-year candle, because my one-year candle, I crawled through that year. I didn't think it was possible to stop eating. When I came here, first of all, I'll qualify for those of you that don't know me, the newcomers, and any others that I am not familiar with. I came to OA in June 1975. Probably some of you weren't even born by June 1975. I was 25 years old, and I weighed 180 pounds, and I couldn't stop eating no matter what I tried. And I had tried everything. I started eating like a bat out of hell when I was 15 years old. And actually, I should turn the clock back a little bit further. When I was about 12 years old, I started eating out of control. And it was, I didn't gain any weight as a result of that eating because I was growing up. And so I was able to not gain weight, and being the vain person that I am, I thought things were really pretty okay. I ate mountains of food, and everyone in the family is quite amazed and astonished with my capacity to eat volumes of food, more than my father, who was 5'11". But that stopped, and anyway, I feel a little bit off right now. I want to start all over again here. The 12 steps help me. The 12 steps, number one, there is not enough food in this universe to satisfy the hole that's inside of me. There's absolutely not enough. There's not enough food. There's not enough praise. There's not enough awards in my profession from any no person, place, or thing can fill the hole inside of me. It's absolutely impossible. And no person, place, or thing could stop me from eating the way that I was eating. There's only one fix for this problem. And for those of you that are new, I hope this doesn't offend you, but it's God. I came here agnostic. At my very first meeting, I agreed to hold everyone's hand at the end of the meeting. I didn't tell anyone that, but I had a very condescending attitude. I didn't know, I was completely unaware of that, but I said, well, they're all holding hands, and I was a hippie in the 60s and the 70s, and I can hold hands with everyone, that's okay. And the whole spiritual aspect of this program was something that I really didn't embrace. I really found it not necessarily offensive, but just against my own personal belief system, which I was completely unsure of. I didn't really know what it was, but I was uncomfortable with the spiritual aspect of this program, which is everything. It's absolutely everything. Every inch of this program, every part of this program, and every part of my recovery has to do with my dependence on a higher power. Because there is no one that there is no person, place, or thing that can fill the hole inside of me. And I got the spiritual aspect at my very first meeting. I just didn't know it. I was filled with the love of the spirit of the universe. That's how my journey started in this program, towards a concept of God, because I couldn't accept the word God. The acronym HP for higher power was way too much for me as well. And spirit of the universe, I wasn't so sure about that. So the way that my spiritual journey started was with acknowledging that I didn't do this. I have nothing to do with the sun rising in the morning and setting in the evening, with the moon, the stars, and the planets. I've got nothing to do with the ebb and the flow of the tide. That's how I started. That's how my spiritual program started. I was able to accept that I didn't do it, and that there had to be, and there has to be, a power greater than myself. And on that foundation, that was the beginning of my foundation of adopting and embracing the spiritual aspect of this program and finding a belief that I could find comfortable. And the thing that was so wonderful, that is so wonderful about this program, is that I was not told I had to believe anything. No one told me I had to do this thing called abstinence. I wanted it desperately because that this Overeaters Anonymous was truly the last house on the block. I had joined Weight Watchers 8 times. I went to a TOPS meeting, and they were so... They were not for me. That's all I can say. People running around with little bibs. I don't even know if TOPS still exists. Does it? Oh, my God. Anyway, you know, it works for some people, I guess. But I'd even work for Weight Watchers. When Jean Nidich, isn't that that was the founder? She came from New York, and she came to Los Angeles, and her first office was on Melrose. It's now an art gallery. I worked there at 16. It was my first job, my very first job, and they fired me. I got fired. I'm not a file clerk. I knew, you know, all the way through high school, my parents told me, we'll send you to college. And when I graduated high school, they had no money, which I sort of had. I got the drift of that all the way, you know, growing up, that, you know, my dad was really rough economically. So I put myself through college. But I had no plans to become a secretary or a file clerk and file. And it's kind of funny because I have to do some filing now. I've had to do filing. I was changed careers 4 years ago, and I actually have to do, like, file clerk stuff. I don't have, like, people ask me who my secretary or assistant is. I don't have one. I mean, there's a staff that helps me to accomplish my job, but I don't have that kind of help. That's what my mother wanted me to do, so I would be out of work. Mom. But the spiritual, I have a higher power today. I'm going to talk about the higher power I have today that goes with me everywhere. This is like an amazing thing. My higher power goes with me everywhere that I go, every challenge that I have to meet, starting with waking up in the morning. That's the big challenge, waking up and starting my day. And so I start it with God, and I start my day on my knees with God, with prayer, and then I take a shower, and I start, and that's where I start. My first three steps. My first three steps are the foundation of my day. And then I meditate. And I read this book. I've had a lot of books. I've donated a lot to the universe because I have a habit of losing these books. This is my last one. I bought it about a month ago. And I have one that's from the early days, and it's got pages missing. And I read page 86 and 87 and 88 every day. And I also read, I know when I'm in trouble and I'm too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, and I seem to hang out in the anger and resentment department a lot, I go to page 67, I read that page. And when I'm angry at a specific individual and I know it, there's other pages for me to read. I do 10 steps in the morning. 10 steps keep me straight, and they keep me on the road. And the last couple of days, I've done 3 10-steps. I've written thousands and thousands and thousands of 10-steps, and there's absolutely no limit on how deep I can go into this program to get to what I want, which is peace of mind and serenity, and number one, to not ever feel that my abstinence is in jeopardy or threatened. And I can tell you that I am truly a blessed person. It's a miracle that I stand here. December 2nd is... right now, I guess I'm 27 and a half years of abstinence, right about 20, that's 3 meals a day and nothing in between, sometimes 2 meals. And when I go over the international dateline, I like traveling. You can't figure out what the hell's going on when you go over the international dateline. I've given up on the meal thing. But it's a miracle. Abstinence is portable. I eat 3 meals a day most of the time, sometimes 2, and nothing in between. And that is something beyond my... I can't do it. It's a higher power that is doing it for me. And in all of these years, I can say that I've only felt a couple of times that my abstinence was in jeopardy. And I remember one incident very distinctly. And I have benchmarks in that first year of abstinence. The first year was truly the most difficult year of my recovery. Absolutely. The first year is so... I applaud anyone who takes a one-year candle, because for me, that... I was really on my way after 1 year. Because in my second month of abstinence, I had 2 roommates that called me up and told me that I had left something behind. And they were sharing an apartment with me, and this was a 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment that I had taken on my own, and they were my neighbors about 6 months prior to that. And for some reason, they became my roommates. And I don't know why. I didn't need the money. There's a lot of reasons, I suppose. But I had moved out of my own apartment. because I was uncomfortable in my own apartment. And I lived in Burbank, and Burbank was not the entertainment capital of the world in 1976. It was absolutely not cool to live in Burbank, so I moved to Toluca Lake, which is far more cool. And my roommates called me up, and they said I'd love something behind. And the day before I was to go to pick up the sheets I'd left behind in the linen closet, I started getting uncomfortable. And I remember this day-and-a-half experience so distinctly because it was the closest time in all these years that I have come to breaking my abstinence. And I started feeling really uncomfortable. And I went to a meeting, and I told my boyfriend I was really uncomfortable. And the next morning when I got up, I said, I can't be with you. I've got to go to a meeting. And we didn't have meetings every day of the week in OA at that time. I went to a lot of AA meetings as well. I went, in my first 12 months of abstinence, I went to 7 to 12 meetings a week. Actually, the first 3 years of my abstinence. And I went to an AA meeting on the Angeleno Street AA meeting in Burbank at 10:30 in the morning. And I really was frightened. I felt like my abstinence was in jeopardy. And I sat in the chair, and there was maybe 200 people at that meeting. And 10 people took cakes at that meeting. And I was so frightened. I knew where I was going to binge. I used to binge a lot in liquor stores. They're easy. It's kind of like, you know, drive-by shooting. You kind of stop your car, you run in, you get your stuff, you run out, you shoot, you eat, and you keep driving. And that's how I binge. I mean, my primary binge buddy was my car. I was always on the run, running away from myself. I didn't know that for many years, but this program has taught me a lot of things. And I sat at that meeting, and I literally held, the chairs were metal chairs like this, the same chairs we sit in, and I held onto the chair. And I prayed that I would be able to sit in the chair for 5 minutes. And I prayed that I could sit in the chair for another 5 minutes, and then for another 5 minutes. And then I made it to the break. And it was with a tremendous amount of relief that I thought it was a miracle, because I knew what I was going to eat. I actually had planned my binge, and I didn't want to go back. In my first 6 months in the program, I broke my abstinence twice, and I went back to the gates of hell. And I entered, and I lived on the other side, and I never want to go back there. I don't know if I have another recovery. And I almost lost it on that day in February 1976. And right after the break, they had cakes, and there was about 10 people that took cakes. And there was a woman who stood up, and she took a cake for 10 years of sobriety. And first of all, I couldn't believe that I made it for the first time. Our meetings were 2 hours in length at that time, that I made it for an hour without running out the door and going up the street to the liquor store. And at that point, with 1 hour of success and 1 hour more of abstinence under my belt, I said to myself, you're going to try to make it for another hour and thank the speakers. And indeed, that's what happened. And when that one woman stood up and accepted the cake for 10 years of sobriety, she said, people have asked me how I did it. And she said, one day at a time. And that's how I do it, you guys. I do it one day at a time. I'm no different than anyone here. I'm not any different. I've just done it longer, and I don't want to go back. And this program has saved my life. The life that I have today is really such a miracle. It is such a miracle. I've been able to walk through things that I really have believed absolutely impossible. Absolutely impossible. You know, in 27 and a half years, a lot of stuff happens. I lost my father after a very long illness. I lost my brother. He committed suicide. That was in my fourth year of abstinence. I have another brother who's paranoid schizophrenic. He was almost sent to jail about a month and a half ago, and by the grace of God, he's in a mental institution, and he's going to have to be in a locked facility. You know, my life hasn't been easy, but you know something? My life is better than I ever dreamed possible. I have a career that I never, ever dreamed that I would ever be living the dream that I live. I'm able to travel all over the world, a free woman. One of my first trip in this program, my first trip, I had broken my abstinence, not on the trip, but it was my first 6 months in program, and I broke my abstinence twice. And I got this idea when I came to the program, because one of the old ideas I had was that I had to be thin to travel. Because I had a whole paradigm, a whole checklist of what I had to look like. Because for me, life was about what I looked like and what people thought of me. Which I hate to say is still very much about what my life is, not what I look like necessarily, but I am very driven, or I'm very it's a negative, a characteristic of mine. I am very obsessed with what people think of me, and so I'm driven to 10 steps to uncover, discover, and discard what it is that's going on inside of me to feel that my self-worth is hinging on something that somebody said to me. But an idea that I had was that I couldn't travel, and that abstinence was not portable. And in this program, I've been able to prove that idea wrong and that concept wrong. And the funniest one, of course, is going over the international dateline. And I'm going to do it again in exactly a month to today. I will be in, I'll be in Buenos Aires on the 26th of August. And I have this long journey. And I haven't, you know, I'm not thinking about how many meals will I eat when it takes 2 days to get there. But I'm going to be on a plane the whole time. So I look at flying on a plane to the other side of the world kind of like being in a hotel. So if I checked into a hotel, I wouldn't eat more than three meals. But the difference is that you might have a day that is 38 hours long. And that's like from sunrise to sunset. It's a very bizarre thing. So I've sort of let go of that. You know, it's like three meals a day, nothing in between, and we'll figure it out when we get up in the sky and bring a lot of my own food with me. But my life really is a miracle. It really is a miracle. I'm a survivor in my family. Out of three children, I'm the one that made it. That's not because of me. It's because of God. God gave me one incredible gift, and that is, He gave me many, 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 many gifts. But the first gift is willingness. Willingness to recover no matter what. Willingness to go to any length no matter what. Willingness to drive the distance, to walk the distance, to run the distance, to make as many phone calls as I need to get to the place that I am feeling serene inside, and that I have my higher power, a conscious contact with my higher power again if I've lost it, and that I'm not jeopardizing myself physically with abstinence, emotionally with my state of mind, or spiritually with losing my concept of a higher power. No one can take any one of those things away from me today, guys. No matter where I am, no matter what, one day at a time, that's how it works for me. So I'm going to wrap up. It's time to wrap up. I want to thank you for being here for me, because with everyone that walks in the door of an OA meeting, I see recovery. No matter what you weigh, no matter what you say, I hear the voice of recovery in everyone that walks into Overeaters Anonymous, because you're here because you want to be. And this no one has forced any one of you to be here. And no matter what you did before you came to this meeting, you're abstinent now. And I made the decision to abstain no matter what at 7:25 on December 1st, 1975. And I make the decision again every day of my life. And it's available for every one of us here. So thank you very much. Thank you.